Michelle, it's funeral day, and when the Undertaker comes to visit, it's not to take you to lunch.
Yeah, that Undertaker had he had another thing coming, didn't he?
This is the West Coast Project podcast for Fargo, episode 207. Did you do this? No, you did it.
Yep.
First of all, Michelle. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Mike.
Did you connect that up to the did you do this? No, you did it.
I did. Did you?
No, what is it? Tell me.
What I found was it's a Picasso painting. Picasso painting completed in June of 1937. It used a palette of grays and blacks and whites, and it's supposed to be known as like one of the most moving and powerful anti-war paintings in history. So that makes it kind of interesting. And the way that I connected it to this episode was while living in Nazi-occupied Paris during World War II, one of the German officers allegedly asked Picasso, upon seeing a photo of this painting called Guernica, and you roll the R, and I can't do that, but ask him, did you do that? And Picasso responded, no, you did it.
So. Oh, okay. Well, thanks for researching that.
Sure.
I've been super slammed again, so I've been slammed for time to even get in my regular watching, much less research.
Sure. No, but that's kind of interesting, though, because the painting was about war and who really caused it. And so very telling about this episode, I think.
So who do you think caused this war, Kansas City or Minnesota?
Well, I mean, we kind of have to blame Kansas City, right? Because they're the ones who came in wanting to take over. So just from the get-go, we have to blame Kansas City for starting this. Is that what you think?
I don't know. They had kind of a business proposition. It was a strong-armed one, but they could have avoided it if they acquiesced to their
if they capitulated to everything that they
them. It was like it's a hostile takeover, you know, essentially.
Yeah, well, you got to blame the people who are hostile then, right?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Okay.
So this one starts out with a hole getting dug. We don't really know what that is because it's just jump between scenes pretty quickly. But it's clearly Rye and Otto's graves being dug.
Yeah.
And we jump back and forth to what appears to be a high-rise in Kansas City where windows are getting washed. And from the outside, some machine gunners shoot the guys on the inside.
Yeah.
Pretty clever way to attack people.
Yeah, but your getaway is kind of limited, so you better make sure they're not coming after you, you know? I mean, you've got, it'll only go as fast as that lift will take them down, so.
Yeah, maybe, unless you drop down a floor and go in there.
Well, sure, yeah.
And then we see Digging Sugar, which I guess is Mike's crew in the having breakfast or having coffee.
Yeah, they had some weird scene where they had the guy and his face in the toilet. They were showing him killing people in various ways with strangling, with putting something around somebody's neck, and then putting somebody's face in the toilet until they drowned. And the toilet scene kind of changed to this coffee scene with coffee creamer swirling around in coffee that looked kind of weird and everything. It was great imagery. I thought this episode probably had the best imagery out of any episode I've seen so far.
You could almost say that this was partly did you do this? No, you did it. It was like one team killing the other side and then the other team killing the other side. Like, we did this. No, you did this. No, you did it. Like they were trading murders of each other.
Right, back and forth. Absolutely.
It's all just mutual, kind of even exterminations. Then we come back and we see it's Rye and Otto's funeral. kind of explaining that digging, and there's nothing left for Rye to go in his grave, so he gets his belt buckle tossed in there.
Yeah.
I don't know. Kind of sad for old Otto and Rye, even though they're gangsters. It was kind of sad.
Well, it was sad. I mean, yeah, it was sad, and sad that there was not even anything left of Rye to put in the ground. So
sad for whoever gets the next run of hamburger out of that grinder.
Oh.
So Bear and Buffalo Ricky are late to the funeral. Bear doesn't like funerals, so I don't know if he's late on purpose, but they missed the funeral.
Yeah, I don't think he wanted to come out there. Which was kind of surprising. We saw a completely different Bear this time.
You think so?
I thought so.
I don't know. I think he was always kind of that way. He's quiet.
Yeah.
He's always been quiet.
He has been quiet, but I pictured him before as more of the kind of gentle giant. I did not see this Bear until this episode.
Well, I think gangsterism runs pretty thoroughly through that family.
Yeah.
There's no, even Charlie, even innocent little Charlie wanted to get in on the action.
Right. Well, and Bear's lost a lot at the beginning of this episode. I mean, he's lost a lot, so.
Well, you could argue he's lost the least. His son's on trial or in jail to be on trial, but he hasn't experienced any murders.
Well, his father was just murdered.
Well, that's true.
And his son, I mean, probably the two closest men to him in his life have been taken away from him in the last few days.
Yeah, and his brother. I guess I'll take that back. You're right. So Ricky, Buffalo Ricky, says it's like Wild Kingdom in here.
Yeah, because of chickens and stuff, right? Chickens and cows.
He's from Buffalo. He's probably not used to this. Although I don't see Buffalo being that far different from Minneapolis or Minnesota. Minneapolis is probably pretty cool. Now, Floyd wants to talk, and she tries to send Simone away, but Simone just says, no, I'm going to stay. I'm old enough.
And Floyd lets her.
So Bear reports the death toll, 5 of the enemy, including management. But the bad news is South Dakota has turned against them.
Okay, I don't know. I wasn't sure what that meant.
It sounded like a negative that South Dakota has turned. And you'd think South Dakota would be on their side, not on the Kansas City side.
Okay, actually what I thought that they said, I should have listened better because I tried a couple times, but I thought they said it's South Dakota's turn. So I wasn't sure what that meant. I thought maybe it was someone else's turn to come up and help them or something. But I could have just heard that wrong.
No, I think that means they flipped over to the Kansas City side. They've turned their loyalty.
Okay.
That's what I think I heard. But again, I've been rushed like crazy through this.
Yeah.
So we find out Hansi's been missing for 2 days. Dot is still missing. And Bear just says, well, we might need a third hole. I think he thinks Dot is missing and dead.
Yeah, or is wishing, hoping.
Yeah, maybe. And Simone even says, he's not that shark where we need a bigger boat. This family deserves the ground. So she's kind of wishing her father's gone too, I think.
Well, come on. I mean, yeah, she's the one who tried to set that in motion.
Yeah, but you can think some things and wish for some things, and you can wish for some things out loud in front of other people, including your grandmother, his mother, Dodd's mother.
Right.
She doesn't keep anything to herself.
Right. I thought that was very bold of Simone in that situation, and I hadn't seen that before, and I wasn't sure why she was. If she was just testing the waters or like standing up for herself and showing Floyd that she was strong, like Floyd had just talked to her about being, or if she was just feeling defiant.
Reckless, and her recklessness costs her.
Yeah.
So Mr. Buffalo tries to talk to Simone, and she just blows him off, takes off on him.
I wonder what made him think he could handle her.
He's Mr. Slick. He's got the leather jacket and the aviator sunglasses, and he probably thinks I'm Mr. City Slicker from Buffalo.
Oh, okay.
You wild kingdom people don't know anything here. So Ben and Lou show up and take Floyd, and they come driving up to the Gerhardt compound, and they take Floyd in.
Yep.
To the sound of more jingle bells in the background.
They sure do. And Bear offers himself up, but Lou says, no, you're good. Do you think that was like a, I don't know, a peacekeeping thing with Bear?
It's a smart-ass, underhanded, oh, you're good. He knows Bear's as criminal as the rest of them.
Oh, no, sure. But I didn't know if it was like a throwback to when Bear came to the station and held him up, if he was in his way saying that's forgiven.
No.
Kind of? No.
No, it's okay. Smart-ass. Lou's a smart-ass. He's Bear's as guilty as anyone else. He's nowhere near good. So Bear asks Lou about Charlie, and he's in the state pen awaiting trial. We kind of find out. And cool Mr. Buffalo gets a phone call from someone saying they know where Dot is.
Yeah.
Bear just says, I don't care, take a message. Right. I think he says it twice, even.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably, like you said, hoping Dot is in trouble or dead or close to dead.
Yeah, I don't think he had any intention of going after Dodd, and I think he was hoping that Dodd was not coming back. I think he's had enough of Dodd.
Well, only if it strategically serves somehow the rest of the Gerhardts to get Dodd back.
Right.
So we get a commercial, and we come back right to the Fargo Police Department, and it seems, Michelle, like they're working Floyd and the other out-of-towners. They call them the out-of-towners, meaning, I guess, Kansas City. They're trying to work both sides to put an end to the violence.
Yeah, I didn't see them really working with Kansas City in any way, but I think that they were just almost, it was almost like they were in self-preservation mode. They wanted it to end, and they were going to go to some pretty big lengths to maybe see if they could get that to happen.
Yeah, they're at their wit's end for this whole thing to end. People are killing each other left and right. And I'm actually starting to wonder if this amounts to the body stacked like cordwood that Lou refers to. You know, maybe there's not some massacre of 80 people coming up. Maybe it's just this accumulation of all these people getting killed. Every episode we've seen between 5 and 12 people get killed.
Yeah, something, and I can't even remember what it was now, but something reminded me of that when I was watching this, that it's going to happen like at Mount Rushmore, that's where we're going to see some kind of big showdown. I don't know why I thought that now. I can't remember why.
Because the dopey guy from Buffalo says that. They got our presidents up on Mount Rushmore, we got to get them down or something, or I got to go see it. It was a touristy, stupid comment.
Well, yeah, but then at the end, you see where they actually are, Ed. So.
Yeah, I know. But why kill 55 innocent people? Why would that stack of bodies mean anything at this point?
Yeah, I don't know. And you could be right. It could just be 15 here, 5 here, whatever it was. But I don't know. Something reminded me. Something made me think that something's going to happen big up there. But I guess we'll just see.
Well, maybe. Well, let's keep going. Maybe we'll think of it. I just don't think that's like the payoff. Like if we see some big slaughter, we're going to go, oh, cool. That's that stack of bodies that we've all been hearing about. It's not going to matter. You know, it's to me, I don't think it'll matter. Seeing a bunch of LifeSpring people or tourists at Mount Rushmore getting killed.
No, I mean, I don't necessarily want to see that either, but I still haven't seen the thing that's traumatized Lou. And in season one, something had traumatized him from this. And I don't think it's anything, you know,
well, he gets
minor.
Shot in the leg. He's wounded for the rest of his life by something.
Yeah, but the story he tells is even, I don't know, it feels bigger than that. I don't know, it just feels bigger than that.
Yeah, I guess you're right. He does feel like he's endured some lifelong wound because of something he saw at Sioux Falls.
Right, like some kind of an emotional trauma based on what he saw. But I haven't seen it yet in this, I don't think.
All right, well, Floyd is undaunted at this police interrogation. She's smoking her pipe.
She is, and she doesn't ask permission to do it either. Of course, it's the 70s. But
she calls the Kansas City some German vulgarity, some Casey Hoschenseisser. Hoschenseissers. Like, I don't even know what that means. I tried to look it up, but I couldn't find it. Probably yeah. Motherfuckers or something. Not good. And Hank asks her, how far does this need to go? You've already lost your husband, your youngest son, whoever's going to be next. You know, how far does this have to go? And Floyd comes back with, well, you know, in the old days, 2 out of 10 of your birth children, only 2 out of 10 would survive. So it's all perspective.
Yeah, that was kind of a cold remark.
Takes a puff on her pipe. And she's probably right, you know, in the Depression and the turn of the century, the 20th century, people probably, what was the childbirth rate, survival rate?
Right. I don't know if it was that low, the survival rate, but I do know that it wasn't like it is now, of course.
So Floyd's still pretty impressed with the butcher of Luverne, Michelle. She thinks the butcher is still in play.
Yeah, but now here, Hank tells her that's not it. And do you think she believes that?
Well, he tries to set her straight, but she thinks that the butcher might be a sleeper agent. Like, Hank, you may not even know, because this guy might be a sleeper agent. He might have been a butcher his whole life, but he's really a hitman she's got a little bit of Carl in her, like thinking that there's a conspiracy somehow. There's a sleeper agent or conspiracy.
Well, she has that notion in her mind about the Butcher of Luverne. She is not going to let it drop. That's for sure.
Well, and the police here now tell her it's over when she says it's over. Again, putting her at this before-the-law gatekeeper-type role.
Mm-hmm.
And Floyd kind of admits, whatever I do, my boys aren't going to stop. So it's pointless to try to convince me, because my boys won't stop.
Right. Right, but here again, that's why I think that she really doesn't have that much control. I mean, right now she obviously has no control, and she doesn't know. She doesn't have control over Dodd. Dodd's wherever Dodd is. She doesn't have control over Bear. I mean, Hansi's gone. She wants him brought back. I don't know.
Floyd is trickier and sneakier than we all thought, though, because she's the one. I think I tried to point it out a couple episodes ago. Like, I was waiting for the real power person to rise up and push her out of the way. And she rose up and pushed herself, like, up to another level. She's the mastermind. Because somewhere along this line of dialogue in this episode, she says to Bear or somebody, like, don't fuck this up now. We've almost got this war won. She's fooling the police here. When she says, my boys won't stop, she's making them believe it's not her. It's a force in her family that she can't stop.
Okay, I thought when she was saying that she was saying they almost have it won because now the police are going to take action into their hands as well. They only gave them immunity as far as anything in the past.
Well, that's a lot.
It is. It's tons. Absolutely. It's crazy immunity. But anything that happens from that point forward is not going to be covered. And that's a big, big deal. That was the one thing she seemed to get really emotional and just, you know, really passionate about, was that she wanted to make sure the boys weren't going to be charged with anything.
I don't think so. I don't think she's worried about it stopping. I think she's worried about victory. She doesn't want peace. She wants victory at the cost of anything.
Okay, I don't think so. I don't think that's really it. I think she wanted, I think she was willing to negotiate, like Simone even said in this episode, to get peace. I think that was her ultimate goal. I think she was.
Well, the next thing that happens is Hank says, how can we help? Give us something, we'll help. Give us something we can use as police to help end this mess. And she just mutters under her breath, snitch. you're asking me to be a snitch.
Well, right. Right.
So she's not. She's not looking for that answer. She's angling for the victory. All right,
well,
Michelle.
Yeah, but then she does.
We see Simone at the Pearl Hotel. Now, I've always wondered this whole series long. Why don't more people just go to the Pearl Hotel? If someone would have just followed Simone, I don't know if they had really a reason to follow her, but. Well, I mean, when the gang from out of state comes to stay, they stay at the Pearl Hotel. Why don't you just go there, find them, and wipe them out?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know.
They're not in some safe house. They're just at, like, the big hotel, the big Luverne Hotel or Fargo. I don't even know where it is. It just seems like an easy place to find answers.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, Bear kind of finally figures this out when he goes there and finds Simone. But she takes some sort of a drug. She takes a hit on some kind of a drug and goes inside.
Yeah, it really perked her up.
Mike is on the phone with the Kansas City Big Shots, and he wants 2 more weeks to break this family, but his time's up.
Yep, he's got 2 days.
In 2 days, they're sending the Undertaker. That's that next on we saw last week.
Yep.
So Simone charges in, says, "You're supposed to kill my dad, not the cripple." We saw that last week, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they go through this little dialogue about how it's not a revolt, it's a revolution, and what's the difference? What difference does it make who you kill first of those who oppress you?
Right.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. Mike, again, is spouting philosophy left and right.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, Otto was in that kitchen with Floyd and Simone. Floyd and Simone were the ones that kind of hit the deck, and of course Otto couldn't, and that's why Otto died. I don't think any care was taken to avoid Simone and Floyd during that shootout.
No,
trying to get to Otto.
Clearly not.
Right. So the fact that she went there was incredibly reckless and incredibly, what's the word, like ballsy. I mean, how can you do that? She knew. I mean, didn't she know?
She doesn't know. She's in it. She's naive and reckless.
I mean, she goes in there. She like charges in there, and the kitchen boy's got her by the hair or something, by the back of her collar. And he's just, like, manhandling her all over the place. And she's just like this spitfire. She's like a cat or something, just, you know, cursing at Mike and going toward him and everything and telling him that she said things were going to be done the other way. I mean, she's, like, incredibly just out of it.
Well, I don't think she thought that I don't think she thought they were going to kill Otto by machine gunning the kitchen with him in it. She probably just thought they were going to lure the guys away from the house and come and get Otto and kill him in his sleep. Or they weren't going to shotgun the kitchen with everybody in it. She didn't know that.
Did.
She's reckless. I know. But
of course she didn't know what was going to happen before it happened. But that's the point. She sent them essentially after Dodd and or Bear. But they didn't go that way. They came after her. Or, after Otto. But if she's in the line of fire, so be it. And the fact that her life meant so little to Mike, and then she went there.
Well, that's the whole point, right? She underestimates. She thinks that they were trying to be careful and only kill Otto, and they don't care. They were just going to shoot up the whole place and kill everyone.
Right.
So she misinterprets that. I thought you were going to be careful with me. You're going to only kill Otto, not the rest of us. You're supposed to Dodd.
Right.
Why are you shooting up the house when we're in it? You're only supposed to kill my father. She's just out of step with. She thinks, you know, she's safe with Mike. She just underestimates it.
Well, and then he turns the tables pretty quick there, and she finally starts to see the mess she's walked into. He starts talking about her being the shine on the apple, the firstborn granddaughter, the favorite, and
yeah. What do you think Mike meant by that? Like you could be a prize if I wanted to keep you. You'd be a special prize because they would put value on you.
Yeah, yeah. Either a bargaining tool or a way to really hurt to hurt Floyd and hurt them.
Maybe, but that seems wrong too. I don't think Simone would have captured a lot of attention if she were kidnapped. Right? Bear wouldn't have put anything on it. Maybe Floyd would have put something on it, but she she didn't seem that valuable of a bargaining chip.
I agree with that. I don't know that she was, but I see why someone would think she was. And plus, you have to look at it like this now. They know that Rye's out of the picture. They don't know about Dodd at this point. But they, as far as they know, you know, there's Bear and then Floyd. Otto's gone. So, I mean, she's next. Chris is in.
You know, it's funny,
prison.
We don't know about Dodd either after all of this still, for sure.
No, right. We don't know anything except that he's not back. And, well, we do know that someone's called and says that they know where he is, but that's all we know. And we still really don't
know.
Yeah,
well, that's Ed. Do you think Ed's telling the truth?
Well, I don't know.
Because there's some conflicting things, because somewhere right before that, Hansi calls in and says, I got bad news about Dodd. Does that mean he's... That to me means Hansi's looking at Dodd and his dead body somewhere. Not that he knows he got taken by Ed the Butcher.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, either way, I don't know. I don't know what that is. I know that. I mean, anything could have happened.
Yeah, but I don't see it that way. I see Hansi. If he knows somebody's taken and they're in a trunk somewhere, he doesn't call home and say, oh, no, they've taken him. What do we do? He goes after that person. The only time Hansi calls in and reports bad news is if he's looking at a corpse.
Well, Hansi is going after the person, though. He is going after him, remember? He killed some people in pursuit of going after him.
I know, but he calls in and reports some sort of bad news to Buffalo or to somebody.
I mean, I don't know. I think that could mean that Dodd's been taken prisoner. I mean, I think that would be certainly bad news worth sharing with the family, and that's what he's doing out there is trying to get him back. But that's nothing but a guess. And as far as Ed goes, for all we know, Ed could have Dodd trying to lure Mike Milligan out there. That could be something that he's doing to kind of get off. I mean, who knows? It didn't look like that necessarily, but anything could be happening at this point. We just don't know.
Well, just when Mike starts to say you're, as the firstborn granddaughter, you may be the shine on the apple, Lou and Ben storm in and save her.
Yep.
And they were a little sloppy with their securing their room, Michelle. They just let Mike sit there. They don't frisk him or anything. I don't know. I guess it's a little poetic license. We can let them do that. But, you know, Mike could have had a submachine gun in his right hand. But they just let him sit on that desk.
Well, yeah. And the only way that I kind of looked over that was because I thought that they were going in there really to kind of ask them, I don't want to say a favor, but to ask something of them. He was asking them to go home.
Yeah, they don't even arrest anybody.
Mm-mm.
All right, we get a commercial, and Ben now takes Simone alone into the elevator and asks if Floyd knows that she's there. Ben, I mean, they're surprised Simone's there, I think. I don't know. Maybe they knew she was there, but they know she shouldn't be there talking to these Kansas City guys.
Absolutely.
But Ben doesn't know Simone that well. He just kind of hints that I've seen you around before. I've seen you at the compound. And Simone immediately starts to use her female wiles on him and flirt with him. Like, you've seen me or you've watched me.
Right.
You won't tell anyone, though. And she knees him right in the groin. And she makes this statement, she's done lying down for men.
Yeah, but that wasn't smart either. Because if she's asking him to not let any of her family know where she was, and then she assaults him?
Nothing she does is smart.
Yeah.
All right, Bear and Buffalo find her now outside the parking lot of the Pearl. Like, they maybe should have done the episode one. And she looks super guilty. And now they know. Finding her there, they know. Maybe at least Bear knows. I don't know if Buffalo Ricky knows. enough, but bear knows.
Yeah, I had a question about that too, because how could, I mean, did Bear know ahead of time? Because Bear and Ricky pull up and they take Simone, Bear does, and Ricky's going to drive her car back, and her car never makes it back, and they never discussed it. It's not like Bear could have called him on a cell phone or something. They never discussed it from there.
Discussed what?
Her car, or, you know, ditch her car somewhere or something like that. I thought Ricky was going to take her car back home. That's what Bear said. So they would have had to have discussed that, what to do with Simone's car, before they even got there, right?
Yeah, so?
So why would they have done that?
So they just found her there, and they're, you know, they're like, okay, take the car. I'm going to take her.
I know, but he didn't. Ricky didn't take the car home.
How do you know that?
Because toward the end, when Floyd comes home, she says, I want to speak to Simone. And Bear says she left and she hasn't come back yet.
Well, maybe they want everyone to think that they took her car and parked it somewhere out in the, you know, they don't want everyone to know
that
they killed
her. Right, of course, of course. But how would Ricky have known that? How would Ricky have known what to do unless they discussed it ahead of time? And how could they have discussed it ahead of time when they just pulled up and found her?
Well, how do you know they didn't? I mean, who cares, Michelle? How do you know they didn't discuss it ahead of time?
Well, I mean, I care. I think it's a legitimate question to ask.
We're going to look for, we're suspicious of somebody in the family. It's Simone. They find out, or maybe they knew it was Simone. They go
and
find
her. Well, that's what I was
her.
Asking. Did they know ahead of time that it was Simone and that they were going to find her there? Because some kind of conversation had to have went on about her car. That's
all. I don't even see why that matters. It doesn't. So what if they did or what if they didn't?
Well, because it changes the story. That's why. It matters if Bear knew ahead of time and went there to find her, or if he didn't.
I don't understand why it matters. Say they knew she was there, or they suspected her, so they went, and it was confirmed, and they found her. Bear just nods to Buffalo and says, all right, you take the car, I'll take her. We'll take care of it. Or they don't know, and they are surprised, and they find Simone there. Same MO, same action to deal with it.
Of course it's the same as far as whatever's going to happen is going to happen. But my point is just that I don't know how Ricky would have known what to do with that car. That's all.
Well, I think if you find the party that you need to take away and deal with, it's if you're two criminals, you kind of know what you're going to do. One of you is going to take the car. The other's going to take care of the person. The only shocking part was it's a person we already knew.
Well, and the fact that, I mean, it was Simone. It was his very niece that he lives with and everything. That's kind of a big deal.
It doesn't matter to him. He's, like, ready to throw his brother under the bus.
Well, I mean, but his brother has directly, I mean, his brother was ready to hit him with a belt last week. It's a different relationship between
Bear
and Dodd.
Yeah, but Simone got them into a bunch of trouble with the war with the KC people, and she was sleeping with the enemy.
Look,
Bear
there's
says
no
that.
Doubt. Yeah, there's no doubt Simone was in trouble, but it wasn't the same contentious relationship between him and Dodd, or
didn't
him
and
her.
It didn't have as much history, but it was equally as bad that she's telling secret. I mean, Bear's father got killed because of Simone's conspiracy with the enemy. She did the ultimate, you know, she spilled secrets to the enemy. It's the worst.
Sure, but how could he know that?
He didn't. So he found her and he found out in 1 minute. That's all he needed to know, Michelle. They didn't need to have a plan like, okay, here's what we'll do. I'll find Simone. I'll take her. You take the car. That doesn't mean anything, I don't think.
Okay, I just wouldn't think that Ricky would know what to do with the car.
All right, I forgot where we were.
Simone and Bear in the truck.
Yeah, Bear seatbelts her in, which is kind of weird. It reminded me of Breaking Bad when, what's her name? Skyler told Junior to wear his seatbelt when she was taking him home right after he found out that his dad was, like, might have killed Uncle Hank. Put on your seatbelt. It's dangerous. He's like, are you fucking kidding me? Are you shitting me? He won't put on the seatbelt. It's like an odd concern to have for somebody that he's about to take and eliminate in the woods.
Yeah, that's why I wasn't sure that was even going to happen.
I think it's just one of those quirks. Like, you're always supposed to wear your seatbelt, even if you're on your death march to your last 3 minutes of life.
I don't know. I thought it was almost like an intimidation thing when he reached across her like that. She flinched from him and everything. I don't know.
Well, think about it this way. Nothing happened on that ride where Bear was convinced. He wasn't certain, and then he was convinced during the ride that he was going to kill her.
You know, I don't know if I agree with that either. I really don't know if I agree with that. When she didn't ask about Chris, I think that was...
Charlie.
I'm sorry, Charlie. Yeah, Charlie. I called him Chris earlier, too. When she didn't ask about him, I think that was the clinching moment for Bear. I really do.
Maybe. All right, Lou and Mike and the kitchen... I think it's Lou and Mike and the kitchen guy. Mm-hmm. Mike asks him, do we have to go home? And Lou just says, no, you just can't be here.
Rob.
And then they get into the whole manifest destiny, capitalism, and aspiring to achieve and being motivated to get things. And Lou just says, look, I only have two pairs of shoes, one for winter and one for summer, and that's all I need. And all your manifest destiny to take over and grow and swallow things up, that's what's causing all this strife.
Yep, greed is a problem. It doesn't have to be all or nothing.
So Mike tells the story of the man who works at the factory.
Yep.
This was an odd little story. The man works at a factory. The boss thinks he's stealing. So every night when he leaves, he searches his wheelbarrow, but he can't find anything. And the answer is that he's stealing wheelbarrows.
Yep.
The answer is obvious. And Ben just says, what? Wait, what? So it's a wheelbarrow factory, and he's stealing one wheelbarrow at a time?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So Mike just says to Lou, we can't leave because we're the future and they're the past. And Lou gives up, just kind of says, okay, we've set our peace.
Yep.
Okay, we come home, or Betsy comes home and finds boots and shoes at her door. And it seems super dramatic, but it turns out to just be Sonny and Carl making pancakes.
Yep. That was pretty scary, though. I can understand why that would scare her.
Yeah, wasn't that scene in the movie Fargo where she sees the boots at the door or something, the snow or the footprint or something at the door tips her off that...
Yeah, there was definitely something about that, about inside that little mudroom area or whatever it was, a little foyer, something about that.
So now we see Dodd continuing on with Simone in the truck from, the 1,000-foot perspective, the up in the air, down on the road?
Man, that was beautiful, too. Yeah.
And they come to the fork in the road. And Simone knows she's caught and she's in big trouble because she's trying to build up her excuse that her father banned her from getting weed, and so she had to always go to the other side of town for weed, and that's why she was at the Pearl.
Is that why she ended up with Mike, though? Is that how? Because we had kind of discussed it at one point of how she did get mixed up with Mike because they never showed us. And is it because she was banned from buying any drugs from... None of their guys would sell her anything because Dodd wouldn't let them. So she went to the other side to get it?
No, I think Mike's a brilliant criminal. He's researched everybody and found all these weaknesses in the Gerhardt family. He probably found out about Simone and put a plan into play to get to her. I don't think that was accidental.
Well, I didn't know if it was accidental, but I just thought maybe that's... where she, how they did get together, because she was going to get her drugs from someplace, and so since her dad wouldn't let her get them from their guys, she got them from the others. But I didn't know. It kind of dawned on me that might have been what it was.
Yeah, but Mike wasn't selling drugs. He found out that was her weakness, and he gave her drugs. I think Mike planned every step along the way to get into Simone. And he found out that was her weakness, and he used it, and that's why he was giving her drugs.
Okay.
We also find out here that Bear is super smart. He even makes her keep her honor with Dodd and not call him Dodd, but call him Dad, which was kind of interesting. Bear seems to be super, except for he's about to kill his niece, he's super loyal to his family. Like, don't dishonor your father. But Simone knows what's up when Bear takes this fork in the road. no matter how hard she's tried to sell the story that she's off just buying drugs, she knows that not something good is not going to happen here.
Yeah, but we even see her, even during this, a couple times, that one time when she's calling her dad Dodd, and Bear brings, you know, points out that he's dad to you, he's your father, it doesn't matter anything else. I'm saying the relationship that you have with him. And she's very indignant. And she says, you know, this is where she kind of gets a little bit of her spunk back, because she's scared up until that point. And she says that Bear knows what he did to her. Bear's seen what he did to her, and he didn't see what he didn't do when Bear wasn't around. And even during really scary things with her, she fights back. She fights back. They can, like, trip a trigger in her, and they do it again. He does it again in a little bit when he blames Otto and Rye's death on her. And even in that situation, even after they've walked through these woods, and it looked like they walked for a long time, they, like, showed the sun setting, it looked like, and she still, at that point, gets indignant and says, don't lay that on me. That was and she starts to call him Dodd, and then she says, my dad. So
yeah, Bear blames her for a lot as they walk through the woods. He almost blames Simone, in almost like in effigy, for Dodd getting Charlie in trouble.
Right.
Like, I can't blame Dodd, he's not here, so I'm blaming you, his daughter.
Right. That's why I thought maybe if she had asked about Charlie, that it would have been different.
Well, I just think Charlie was the closest player to Bear in this. That was the deepest wound that he got from all
sure.
these people. So that, you know, that meant a lot to him. But here he says the very things we're talking about. You were sleeping with the enemy. And they walk through this really kind of cool birch tree forest with the light and the shadows and the birch trees. It was like really discordant, like a jazz trumpet playing and some other ominous music underneath it. And Simone tries to make some pretty desperate offers here, even to be like a double agent.
Yep.
And then Bear just spells it out for her. You killed your uncle, your own grandfather. That's all on you. And then he makes her do, Michelle, what they do in movies, and it's kind of tropey, like, kneel down before I kill you. Why do guys want people to kneel down before they kill them?
I actually wondered that myself. I kind of wondered, was it like a nicety so she wouldn't fall? But, I mean, that didn't really make any sense. I don't know. And are we 100% sure that he did kill her?
Yeah. What's he going to do?
I don't know.
Well, first of all, why do you make people kneel down? But why do you kneel down if you're the killie, you're the murdered person? Why not just turn and run? The last thing you're going to do is kneel down, and might as well make the last thing you do try to run and duck behind a tree.
Yeah, I don't know.
But Bear seems like he's at a bit of a crossroads himself here. He says, none of us are family. Because she kind of plays that card up, family. None of us are family anymore, baby. And Bear kind of recalls what, who said it? Lou? About, hush, it's already done, you're already dead. Like Lou was saying, when guys got their legs blown off, they didn't know they were already dead.
Oh, okay. I didn't relate that.
Well, he says, hush, it's already done. Stop arguing. It's already done.
Yeah, she's begging him to banish her, shave her head, because he told the story about the, who was it sleeping with the was it the German women? Or I can't remember the story he told, but how they shaved their heads and banished them.
I think he meant the French, to like being traitors and sleeping with the enemy, sleeping with the Germans. Although okay. Maybe it was his team. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's weird because his father was on one side and, you know, he was maybe on the other. I can't remember. But it was collaboration with the enemy. It's like you slept with the enemy, so
right.
You're already dead.
Right, but she starts saying to banish her, shave her head or whatever, just run her off and she'll leave and she'll never come back. And that's when he tells her to hush, it's already done. But we didn't see him shoot her, and we didn't
hear.
Yeah,
but you know he did.
I think he did. But
plus, it's a callback. If he doesn't kill her, then all these callbacks to these other things are meaningless. It's a callback to to Hank or Lou, whoever was telling Ed and Peggy, be careful, you might already be dead. You know, you might already be dead. I'm just trying to help you now.
Right.
And the soldiers and all that. So, all right, Bear goes back to the truck and breaks away his cast. We never saw why he got that cast, did we?
I can't remember. I can't remember.
But he's pretty mad, and he's pretty emotional almost.
Upset.
Breaks off this cast to the Londonderry Oh Danny Boy music from another old Cones movie, Miller's Crossing, where they have a killing in the woods and they play that Londonderry Danny Boy song.
And wasn't the scenes there cool? How they did all the split screens and even went through Rye and Simone, and they showed Dodd and you know, Hansi and Charlie and just everything.
I think those were Bear's memories, those split screens.
Sure. Yeah, I think so,
too. Because it was Floyd and Dodd, and it was the scene of Hansi. We already had seen that, of him loading his gun.
Right.
And then, like you said, Rye, and then Simone. Simone's gone now. I think it's flashback. And he goes home, and Mr. Buffalo meets him and tells him, that guy called you again. He knows where Dodd is. And Bear just says, there's no Dodd anymore. So I think that's Ed. Ed's been trying to call everybody.
I don't know. I mean, would it be Ed? And if it's Ed, why would he call them?
Because he knows they're after him. Ed's on the run. He knows the Gerhardts are after him. And he knows he's got, maybe if he does have Dodd, dead or alive, that it's valuable to him, that he can trade it for something or what.
It just seems funny that he called both them and Mike. Maybe he called Mike because they wouldn't answer or they wouldn't take his call or something. I don't know.
Maybe. Or maybe Dodd really is dead and somebody found the body. I don't know.
I don't know.
It would have been easy to find out Dodd's fate if Hank had only gone back in after that knock on the head.
Well, Hank even says he should have.
So there's a commercial, Michelle, and then Sonny, Noreen, and Carl, and Molly, all the kids are there. They're all in charge of Betsy, even Carl. I'm calling Carl and Sonny kids in this. Betsy's like the mom of this morbid family.
Yeah.
And Lou calls in and asks how they're all doing. Is Carl drinking? How's Molly? Is Noreen there? How are you feeling? This was a pretty, I mean, these scenes with Betsy now are getting to be super touching. I think her end is pretty near, Michelle. It's really sad. Even when Hank tries to say hi through the phone, say hi for me, they're all trying to wedge in their last moments with her.
Yeah, and it's sad because of how busy Lou is as well and having to be away and stuff like that. And it's so, I don't know, I mean, she won't ask for anything, you know. I mean, life is just going on as normal, and that's how she wants it around her. She's not asking for any special favors. She's not taking advantage. Not that you could, but she's not asking for anything because of this. And it's just, she's so brave.
It would be wrong if she did change and start to ask for things. I think this is good for Lou to be able to remember her this way. But, I mean, they're at the point, I think, with this story where any conversation with Betsy could be the last one they have. It's pretty clear. I mean, it's very, everyone is poignant. It's, every goodbye is like, might be the very last goodbye. I mean, I've even said it a couple times in comments through two or three episodes now.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't seem sick enough to me yet that she's, like, really ready to check out. But I definitely see it headed in that way.
All the hints are there. She says, come home soon. I mean, I think Betsy's going to die without Lou by her side. He's going to be doing his job, and she's going to die. And then, so Carl has this really cool arc comment. It was a really kind of a non-sexual way of complimenting Betsy. It's like, you're a great woman. And I think she kind of says goodbye through Carl, like, Carl's an instrument of her being able to say goodbye.
I don't think I knew that Lou and Carl were that close. And to see that and hear the things that she said to Carl, that was I don't know. It was good. It was. It's almost better.
It's almost better if they're not that close, though. Like Carl's just a good guy that Lou knows he can trust. That and he's a strong arm. He's got, you know, he's got chops. He's got the gun. He stood up for Sonny when Hansi came into the shop that time. There, and he doesn't have probably a lot of choices, right? He's got Hank's working. I mean, there's not a lot of able men here to protect these innocent people.
And remember when you thought about Peggy that Ed was supposed to marry her older sister? You had read that somewhere, and it turns out that was Betsy and Lou.
No, I didn't say that. Ed's friend was supposed to marry Peggy, not sister.
Okay.
Ed's friend was supposed to marry Peggy. He got killed in the Vietnam War, and again, I should be able to cite this, but I can't tell you where I heard this or what or how real it is. But Ed was supposed to step up and take care of Peggy should anything happen to the friend. And when the friend got killed, that's how Ed kind of got with Peggy.
Okay. Well, that just kind of reminded me of the story with Betsy and Lou and how Lou was supposed to marry her older sister. And he and her, and then he went to Vietnam and her older sister wasn't good at being patient, so he ended up with her. And it was kind of sad. She said that, you know, he ended up with the dead. And it was
the
like
dud.
The dud, is that what she said?
Yeah.
I heard dead.
No, the and, dud. Like, the I'm the less of the two sisters.
Okay, I didn't get that. But
yeah, not the dead. He ended
I thought
up with
that's
the dead
what she
one.
Said. Well, I thought that's what she said because
no,
she thought
dud.
She was dying and that's what she was talking about.
No, she's just being kind of self-deprecating, kind of sad that she's so hard on herself in her seemingly last few days here.
Yeah, see, I didn't think that she was being hard on herself. I thought she was just feeling bad for Lou, that Lou ended up with her and now she wasn't going to be around for him.
Well, she is like that, but she's not calling herself the dead. She calls herself the dud.
Okay.
And maybe that's the implication, like he got the one that didn't live past being 32 years old. That's the dud. But I think she says dud, not dead.
Okay.
So Floyd now, this is where Floyd puts on her mafia chops here. Floyd appears to have flipped. She wants to the cops. She wants to take all the blame, avoid all the repercussions for her children and grandchildren. No murder charges are to be placed. And here's her story. She tells the story of the crime families. So the deal is Kansas City runs dope through a company called Legit Trucking out of Cincinnati. They hide it in the truck tires.
Yep.
And the GAC, she calls GAC the drugs, I guess. The GAC is stored in a Fargo nail salon and auto repair shop, where they have weapons on the roof. And we jump over to Mike and the kitchen brother. And the kitchen guy answers the phone again without saying anything, just picks it up.
Yeah, that's funny.
And it's a call for Mike, and it's Hamish. I guess he's the last big shot in Kansas City, or the next level up of big shots. It says, "Your time's up, you failed, the Undertaker is coming."
Yep, you're done.
And we get a commercial. Now, Floyd has a phalanx of soldiers waiting for her when she leaves this Fargo jail. Everybody, all her team, her A-team is there. And she starts telling orders to people. She tells Bear, "Tell Hansi to come in and find Dodd." And Bear just says, "How? How am I going to do that?" And Floyd doesn't care how. "We've just got to finish them while they're reeling. The war is almost won." So everything she's done with the cops to spill this, "I'm going to flip, I'm going to... you give me all the blame, let my children and grandchildren free." This is strategy for her. She's working these cops.
And then I don't understand it. How does that help her?
Well, I think what we just hear next from Ben and Lou tells us that answer. Because Ben asks Lou, "What do you think?" And Lou says, "We just chose a side." So now the Gerhardts have at least placed the law on their side, because they're short of manpower here.
Right.
And there, you know, Floyd might just be kind of grandstanding a little, that we've almost won this war. But, you know, that's the part of the role of a leader, I think, the captain, right, the coach. Let you think you can win, even if the odds are against you. You know, motivate
you. Sure. Yeah, I thought she did spill it on him. And I thought that's wise because based on what Lou and Hank said, they did pick a side. So essentially they're fighting with them now to end this. I mean, I don't know that they want them to fight, but they're taking up their fight or whatever.
Well, do you think you'd believe everything that Floyd says to the police is true?
Well, yeah, I think what she told him was true. And the reason I think that she would keep her word on it is to keep her children and grandchildren safe. To keep them out of trouble. Because if they do anything else, they're not going to be exempt from charges for it.
So, I put Floyd in the same category as Tywin Lannister. That he wants to keep the family name strong and alive, but that may mean that some of the family members get killed in the process. She, you know, that the war has to be fought, so she's not going to back away from the war just to save her own family's lives individually. She's trying to make the family name survive, and I think that's what she's doing in this strategy with the police. Get the boys home. We've got to finish the other side off while they're reeling. This war's almost won. She's not bringing them home for safety. She's bringing them home for strategy to finish the war and win the war.
You might be right with it. I didn't really think about their part in it after that, but I did believe what she said to Lou and Hank.
So we hear from Hank that the Indian, and I guess this is Hansi.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know any other Indians in this yet. Shot two troopers in Sioux Falls, and he's out on the prowl still for Peggy and Ed. And one of those troopers died, and one of the troopers is dead, and the other is really hurt badly.
Yep.
And so Ben just says, well, we just gave the Gerhardts a pass. Holy shit. And Lou just turns to him and says, you're a shit cop.
Ben says, they start talking about that Hansi just shot those troopers in Sioux Falls. And Ben says, that's South Dakota's problem. And that's when, and Hank and Lou want to go and handle that. And Ben says that he thinks they should stay there. And that's when Lou said that he didn't think he's any good.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, Ben does respond with, well, I'm getting promoted next month. That must mean I'm not a totally shit cop.
Right.
I mean, it is proof that he's a shit cop. That's what he thinks he needs to do is just get a promotion and he's a great cop.
Right.
While people are dying.
Right. And not go take care of the stuff. And Lou says that he and Hank will go try to save the day then and Ben should just stay there. But I was glad Lou finally called him on it.
So, Michelle, do you think that Carl helped or hurt Betsy more by showing up and cooking those pancakes? Looks like she's got a heck of a lot of cleaning up to do after Team Carl.
Yeah, she probably does, but there's got to be some kind of comfort
in
that.
Well, yeah, he's there for muscle. He's not there for cooking pancakes.
Sure.
But she's cleaning up while he's drinking beer at what time, 9:30 in the morning?
Yeah.
But Carl provides something else for Betsy in that he makes her laugh. Which is really probably super valuable to her at this point.
Oh, sure.
And she then relates that story that you told about how Lou was supposed to marry Lenore, her sister, but Vietnam interrupted that, and then Lou got me the dud. And then Carl says, if I was building an ark, I'd pick you two. I'd pick you and Lou. Pretty nice compliment from old Carl.
I love Carl. I'm telling you, Carl has touched my heart in this episode and the last episode.
Well, this is more of why I think Betsy's near the end here, because she's telling Carl to look after them.
Yeah.
And Dad, too, meaning Hank. He'll need it before too long.
Mm-hmm.
Carl's telling Carl this. Carl's not going to look after anybody.
Well, that's what I said. That's why I said earlier I didn't know Carl and Lou were that close. And if you have someone dying that's asking you to look after somebody, you would think that it would be somebody close, right?
Well, or maybe somebody you sense could become close.
Yeah.
Betsy knows she got the sugar and not the medicine.
Well, she thinks, she said.
And then she tells Carl if Lou gets married again, tell him it's okay, but just not to ever marry Rhonda Knutson.
Well, because she has small eyes or something.
Eyes too close together.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I typed this again here. I don't think Betsy will ever see Lou again. I think that they might have said their goodbyes in that phone call.
Good grief.
Carl hugs her, and it's pretty touching that Carl hugs her, and she kind of hugs him back. It was a nice little bonding moment between two unsuspecting people that you would have never put together.
She was taken aback by the hug for a minute. She kind of stands there with her arms kind of out to the side, and then she kind of embraces him back. And I have really come to appreciate watching Carl in this. I'm so surprised. He is the standout character to me, the one that I was not expecting.
So I don't know if I've convinced myself that Betsy's dead so much that I'm reading so much into this, but when she's walking outside of Hank's house and she walks past that glass that's imperfect in the 80s mm-hmm. or whatever, or 70s, I guess they weren't as good at making panes of window glass as they are today.
Sure.
Because it has that shimmer, that little wave in it.
Mm-hmm.
And when she walks on the outside, we watch from the inside out, it looks like she's like almost ghosty. Like it's a shimmer of herself walking when she passes through that wave in the glass.
Yep.
It's uneven. It's really an odd perception of Betsy.
And I was worried about her going in there, too. And turns out, you know, I guess we should have been worried about her.
Well, I don't know why yet. I mean, maybe we should be. But she goes in there, and she's looking for the cat, Snowball the cat. She sees some pretty touching old family photos, some super old photos. And it's really quiet in there. You know, mm-hmm. you can't hear much of anything in the inside. You hear maybe a vehicle or two pass on the outside. And then those icons. Do you think those icons were... What do you think? Well, just what do you think they were?
They were like symbols. It was some kind of alien symbol, right?
Well, they were alien or they were Indian. Like, was Hanzi up to something? Or were they hobo, the hobo symbols? Like in Hobos Leave Outside People's Houses to give... messages to other hobos?
I've never seen that.
Well, on Mad Men, they did that. They had the hobo sign where the guys would put signals.
I don't know. I mean, I just didn't even give it a second thought. I thought it was alien symbols, and I didn't even bother to think of anything else. It just... it was just shocking.
Did you stop and read some of them?
No, I didn't.
I did. There were a lot of them, but some of them were child, love, share, family, care, house, sick, fetus, dead, angry conversation. And then they flashed through them really quickly at one point, and I stopped and stop-motioned and looked at them. And at one point, there was something written on one page, and it said, "I like the look of very angular sum." I might have written this down wrong. Bold, but they shouldn't be that harsh. And then the I Ching, the book, the Chinese philosophy book, the I Ching.
Hmm.
So Hank's doing all that, or somebody's invaded Hank's house, or what?
I thought Hank had done it. I thought Hank knew more about whatever the alien thing going on is than we know about. But that's just what crossed my mind. I don't know why. It was just like this little alien thing thrown into this episode, and that's all you get. It was only, what, you know, 10, 15 seconds out of the whole thing, and
maybe
that's all
Hank's
they gave
a lens.
Us.
Hank's an alien lens.
I don't know what that is.
If you like to show The Leftovers, the one lady thinks she's a lens that brings...
Oh, okay, yeah.
You bring the focus of whatever the odd thing happening is into more... focuses it. She's a lens.
So
he's a lens.
I'm curious now if something's going to happen with Betsy about the aliens, like you said. And I am curious, because remember, like, Malvo in season one? I'm wondering if that really is going to come to fruition, like you were talking about last time, where he's something that comes from that.
Do you want the supernatural to enter into this world of Fargo?
It's already there. I mean, they've shown it to us, time passing and weird stuff. It began with that, with Rye being drawn out into the road that caused him to get hit, which caused all of this explosion of stuff. So I think it's there. I think if they do something majorly out of the realm of ordinary, I think it might not be good.
Well, they've implied that there's something there, but they haven't shown anything concrete. I guess that's what I'm asking you. Do you want to see the concrete spaceship or the gigantic-eyed, big-headed alien?
Well, of course not, but they're going to have to give us something. I mean, it can't be goofy. It can't be something that's just completely bizarre. The stuff that we've seen so far is just mystical. You don't understand it. And I hope they help us understand something.
I prefer it to be mystical. I want it to stay the same. I don't want to see Hank with a snapshot of a flying saucer or something.
Well, no, because that's too far. But don't you want those photos or those symbols explained? I want them explained, for sure. They've got to explain them. They can't put that in there and then just drop it and not tell us anything else about it.
All right. Bear and Floyd get home, Michelle. She asks for Simone right away, and Buffalo shows up. There's a call from Hansi. You got to take it. He's found Dodd. So, again, has he found Dodd dead? Has he found Dodd alive? Has he found Dodd's... see him getting driven away in the trunk of a car? What has he found?
Who knows?
I think he's... I don't know. I think he has to have found Dodd dead. I don't see Hansi calling. I've been through this already. I saw Dodd get taken away. Come help me. I don't see Hansi doing that.
No, not come help me, but letting him know where he's at and what's going on in the process.
Yeah,
of
but
it.
Then I we saw Ed. So someone here has to be lying, because then we saw Ed casually walking away from the payphone saying, "I've got your boy in my trunk." So if Hansi's found him, that means Hansi's right there on the payphone in that gas station. I don't think Hansi makes that call. I think Hansi goes and gets Dodd out of that trunk.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think Ed's lying and Dodd's dead in front of Hansi somewhere.
See, I just don't picture Hansi calling up and saying that. What would be the purpose of that?
Well, maybe Ed calls as Hansi and tells Buffalo, "I've got Dodd." Or I'm Hansi. Ed just says, "I'm Hansi. And I've got Dodd."
I don't know.
Hansi
does not call.
Hansi does not call and say, "I've got Dodd. I know where he is, but I can't. You know, he's not safe or dead. He's just not. Till that deal is done, he's a hound dog after him."
He said he's got him. That's what he said.
He says he's found him.
Okay,
but Buffalo,
found him could mean that you found him.
Yeah, but you don't...
Found out where he is.
Hansi doesn't say, "I've found him, but he's not safe yet." Hansi says, "I found him and he's dead," or "I found him and he's safe."
Okay, Hansi, we don't hear Hansi actually say anything at all. Ricky comes out and says that Hansi's on the phone and has found Dodd. So
right. If
we heard Hansi say, "I've found Dodd," that would maybe be different. I would expect him to be with Dodd if he said that, dead or alive. But hearing Ricky say that Hansi's on the phone and has found Dodd, that could mean anything. And I'm kind of surprised that Hansi would be telling Ricky on the phone. But
right,
he
would only tell Floyd or somebody.
Yeah.
So maybe it's Ed. Maybe it's Ed pretending to be Hansi, telling whoever picks up the phone, "I've found Dodd."
Yeah, I don't know.
Ed wants to take out more. Ed's not just going to say, "I'll give you Dodd back if you're nice to me for the rest of my life." He's got to kill off these Gearhearts, or they're going to kill him off. I don't know. I guess we'll see. Next, Mike Milligan awaits the Undertaker. Michelle, he's fixing his lapels and looking pretty dandy there in his nice... He actually gets insulted by the Undertaker, which I think is a reflection of his dress, of the way he's dressed. But the Undertaker gets in the elevator, takes the ride up. He looks like an Undertaker. And even he has his own bookended bodyguards.
Yep.
Those two guys. Kitchen lets them in. The Undertaker insults Mike. I can't remember the insult, but it's something about the... It's like something purple. It calls him a foofy name. Where's the foofy who shit the bed? He says, you know, where's the guy who shit the bed? And in 2 seconds, all three of them are dead. Mike has the taxi driver gun on the rack in his sleeve.
Yep.
And just swoops his arm out. Boom, he's dead. And then one of them knifes the other one, and the kitchen knifes the other one.
I mean, it is quick, and it is over. And that was the most noise we've heard out of the kitchen guys when he's standing there huffing and puffing after it's over, almost like he was scared. That's how I took that, because, I mean, he's been in more physically challenging situations than that. But once that's over, he's standing there, and you can really hear, like, the deep breaths and stuff. So I think they were kind of concerned about the Undertaker coming.
So then Mike answers the phone, and it's Ed. He's got Dodd in the trunk of his car. Maybe this is Ed's plan. He tells each of the two sides he's got Dodd in the trunk of the car, and he puts them together in the same place, and they just start to wipe each other out.
Now that is a plausible thing. That could definitely maybe happen if they all showed up at the same time.
Yeah, and then Ed and Peggy just try to pick up the pieces and either run or finish off the rest of them.
And I don't know if you noticed or not, but this is the very first time, and I don't know what significance it might have, but this is the first time we've ever seen Mike, I think, pick up the phone. It's always the kitchen picking up the phone. And this one time when Ed calls, it was actually Mike that picked it up. So.
And we also do not see Peggy. It looks like Ed's by himself.
Yeah, but we see the on the coming up stuff that she's there.
Well, I mean, we didn't see her in this episode.
No.
Yeah, I'm sure she's still there. She's got to go to LifeSpring, Michelle.
Well,
she's got to actualize herself. All right, Michelle, sorry for being so snipey. I had a hard day, but that's 207. did you do this? No, you did it. And next week is Lop Lop 208.
Yep.
Michelle, do you have any comments from people that you wanted to share?
I didn't this week, nope.
You say that every week. Like you had 15 last week. You know, it's funny, this week I didn't have any, Mike.
Well, I mean, what do you want me to say if I didn't have any? I didn't
No, but
have
you
any.
Always have people you're talking to. Why don't you talk about them sometimes?
Well, I don't really talk to anybody specifically about Fargo, usually. It's usually about the affair.
Oh, okay. Hey, that's another podcast we do, The Affair. On yeah. West Coast Project. What do you think's better, Michelle, Fargo or The Affair?
Probably Fargo is better, but The Affair is really, really good, too. I think they have really different appeals to different audience, or maybe even to the same audience, but just a different appeal. What do you think?
There's less ears getting chopped off in The Affair.
But some ears, right?
Yeah. No. So so we do that one, we do a few others, but that's it for this West Coast Project theme for Fargo. Next week we'll do Lop Lop, Michelle.
Yep.
I think Lop Lop has something to do with lopping slices of turkey off the turkey.
I don't know. I haven't looked up Lop Lop yet. I had tons of notes. I had like 14 pages of notes on this. There's a lot of stuff. I wanted to make sure I didn't forget anything.
Well, What do you got? Did you say them all?
Yeah.
All right. Lop Lop has a meaning. If you Google it, it comes up.
Oh, I'm sure. Every single thing I've seen from them so far has, so I would be surprised if it didn't.
All right. Well, we'll say goodbye to Simone. And I'll say goodbye to you till next week, Michelle. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Okay, you too, Mike.
All right, see you then.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.